Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. This Week in America, coast to coast. Thank you for joining us. Richard Allen writes speculative fiction that explores freedom, language, and resistance, starting with his novel Kobo, The Boy Who Was Never Meant to Speak. In a world where humans are kept as pets by an alien Ceres, Kobo must navigate the complex boundaries between domestication and freedom, discovering what it truly means to be human. Richard is a lawyer who lives with his wife and their yellow and chocolate Labrador retrievers in Crested Butte, Colorado, a longtime fan and former teacher of science and speculative fiction. His love of pets led him to wonder what humans would be like in similar circumstances and to write this book. His other interests include the law. He has argued 10 cases in the Supreme Court and taught courses on the Constitution, the Supreme Court, and criminal justice, as well as history. This is his first published novel. Richard Allen, author of Kobo, our guest on This Week in America. Richard, welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Rick.
What an interesting approach you take with this book, and I got to figure out where this came from. I mentioned you got the dogs, and you sit around thinking, I wonder what it would be like if the roles were reversed. We were playing in the carpet now, and they were feeding us and taking care of us. Where did this idea come from, and more importantly, how did it develop into this riveting story, Kobo?
Well, I just started wondering what we would be like when I see our dogs sleeping 20 hours a day and getting so excited about their two bowls of mush every morning and evening. and wondered, would we be like that? And so, I started developing a story around that question to sort of explore what makes us human and what differs us from animals. I sort of came to the conclusion that we would behave pretty much as our pets do. If we had no language or culture or other human community, in a very similar circumstances as we live with our pets, with owners who have a comparable intelligence and technology to humans today, and who love their pets, but sometimes abuse them. So that developed my story.
You know, it's interesting. Once you take that concept, I wonder what it would be like. Fascinating concept. Now you create this world where it actually happens. Talk about world building, which you've done with this. You've got, explain how you came up with this and where the story takes place.
Well, the story takes place on a distant planet, close to the center of our Milky Way galaxy, some 20,000 light years away from Earth. And the aliens are these large, up to 9 feet tall creatures who have an advanced technology and who were exploring the outer parts of the galaxy when they discovered this planet where there were several thousand humans living in very primitive conditions. And they took some of them back to their own planet, Pavin, and found that they made excellent pets and were very trainable. And they spent the next 1600 years breeding them into different forms. And my two main characters, Kobo and his mate Ra, are kind of like our Labradors, very friendly,
yes,
but can be aggressive. And so they live on this planet Pavin, which is very comparable to Earth, although has somewhat a lighter gravity, so the humans can be acrobats more readily on Pavin. And most of the humans live very happily with their owners.
You touch on a number of themes in the book. The book is Kobo. It's available wherever books are sold. Richard Allen is the author. His website is richardallenauthor.com. All of this on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Talk about the themes, because you've got a lot going on here. You read a page in Kobo and you stop and you sort of go back and analyze it. And it really causes the reader to think, not only enjoy the story, but to think as well. What are some of the themes that you address in Kobo?
Well, one of the themes is the basic need of humans to communicate verbally. They can't communicate with their owners, these grobs, because the grobs speak in a very low register. So to humans, it's just like a unintelligible rumble. And to the grobs, the humans are utterances are like mice squeaking. So the humans have no language, and they have no community other than occasional contact with other humans in dog parks and human parks and things like that, and therefore no culture. So one of the themes is later in the story, they come across this device that was brought back from the planet they were captured from, which turns out to be a interactive teaching device. It's an oval green stone, and when a human touches it, it starts to talk to them and teach them. So eventually Kobo and his mate Ra, they're 14 and 15 when the story starts, learn from this device, which they hide from their owners, to speak and are educated as human children are. So one of the themes is what effect the attention acquisition of language has on them, and how it enhances memories, and how it causes these humans to start questioning things and not to accept as our dogs do things as they are. That's one of the themes. Another is yearning for once they learn language and get a little education, they're yearning for freedom. In the story, the grobs, these two humans have, they know nothing about sex, but by trial and error, they learn it and have two infants who, after they're 1, 2, or 3 years old, are sold by their grobs to others. And after the second one is sold, Kobo becomes enraged and attacks his male owner. And that results in him being sent to another planet in the Pavan system, Loma, to work in the mines that the grobs have an industrial complex there as a slave with several thousand other humans who work in these mines. And eventually Ra is also captured and sent off to Loma, and the story develops. In the story, Kobo comes across a group of other humans in Loma that have escaped from the grobs and are hiding from the grobs, and he joins that community. The story develops. They're living in this, Kobo's living in this community, and eventually he discovers Ra, and I won't give away the whole story, but that's basically it.
This is all in Richard Allen's new book, Kobo. This is his first published novel. It is doing exceptionally well. I like reading the reviews, and people are like, I never liked science fiction before, but I started reading this. A friend asked me to read it, and I couldn't put it down. I'm glad that he did. Others are saying, science fiction. And you wonder, is this science fiction when you put it in the science fiction genre?
Well, it involves some science fiction in that it involves space travel to distant planets. But mainly it's more speculative fiction. It explores the unique relationships between these humans and their grobs, and between the humans and other humans. in unusual circumstances. So I'd call it more speculative fiction than science fiction, but it involves some science.
Who was the intended audience for this? Who did you write this book for? What's the target audience?
I wrote it for general adults mainly.
Yes.
It has some sex in it, so it's really not appropriate for young children, but it's certainly appropriate for young adults. But I didn't write it with that target, that audience specifically. I wrote it for a general audience, especially those who are interested in science and speculative fiction.
You really touch on some topics that are really important in our society. Talk about the aspect of that, maybe reflecting some of the issues that we deal with as human adults.
Well, one of the issues that we deal with today, obviously, are conflict, conflicts within societies. I developed this more in the sequel that has just been published called Kobo's Children. Here's the cover right there.
Yeah, we have that on the screen too. So Kobo's Children. So both of these are available now wherever books are sold.
The urge of some malefactors in these communities to dominate them and become dictators, I suppose. I'm not drawing. I'm not conscious of direct parallels to current events and what goes on in this story, but there obviously are some.
The book is available. The books are available wherever books are sold. Kobo's Children, the new addition to the series, written by our guest on the program today, Richard Allen. What's it been like writing this? People are reading it and going through a period of self-reflection. They're taking the topics, the themes that you are bringing out, and giving it a very serious thought. What impact has this had on you? Did you stop and think about some of these issues as you were writing about them?
Oh, absolutely. Writing anything sort of forces you to think
yes.
about the issues that are involved. And I wrote it over a period of years. I wrote both of these books over a period of years, and I've written others as yet unpublished, mainly for my own enjoyment. But yes, I reflected a lot on these issues and found them very interesting.
How about your dogs? Do you treat the dogs any differently now after the book and sort of being in their minds as you're
yes,
writing the
story?
Yes, I
have these deep philosophical conversations with them, and they just wag their tails.
And sleep 20 hours a day. That part of it isn't all that bad. There may be some benefits to that lifestyle.
Yeah.
Kobo's Children is out now. That's the sequel. Are you working on something else? Will this story continue?
Yes. Kobo's Children takes place on this other planet, mainly on this other planet, Loma, and the human community that exists there. After the death of Kobo, which happens at the end of the first book, and I'm now working on at the end of the Kobo's Children, my first sequel. These humans are discovered to the great surprise of explorers from Earth who find this planet, which is very Earth-like, and their monitors and their drones are looking it over, and they find these primitive humans out hunting and interacting. These explorers face the question of whether to make contact with these humans, and more importantly, whether to make contact with the grobs in this planetary system. And I won't tell you what the result is, but I'm working on another sequel, second sequel, I guess, in which these humans return to Earth. And they bring back some of the primitive humans on Loma back to Earth. Now, Earth is 20,000 light years away.
Yes.
But with Einstein's time dilation, Their spaceship travels at 99.4% of the speed of light. So their elapsed time on the spaceship is basically a lifetime. So these humans are going to get back to Earth 40,000 years roughly from the present. And so I'm trying to figure out what humanity will be like in 40,000 years. And I'm not sure. Well, do you have any opinions?
I have no opinion. I'm not sure what it's going to be like a month from now, let alone thousands of years in the future. Yeah. You take on so many topics that we talked about, universal themes, identity, freedom, empathy, resistance, slavery, humanity. You also balance it out with hope, love, and determination. Talk about that. You've got that nice balance there, some positive features, themes as well.
Well, yes. Love is a big part of these stories. Both love with their alien owners, as repulsive as we might find them to be, and of course, love the other way, the owners for their pets, but also humans. The main relationship in the first book is the relationship between Kobo and his mate Ra. The second book is the relationship between Ra and her mate, a fellow named Azu, who is sort of a noble savage character living in a Rousseauian state of nature. And he encounters her and abducts her and eventually becomes her mate. And then he has to adjust to human society that she brings him back to. So that's a major theme in the second book.
So much as you're reading, again, jumping into all of these themes that Richard is talking about, what do you hope the takeaway is when somebody reads Kobo? What do you hope the takeaway is? What do you hope stays with them long after they've put the book down?
Well, I didn't write this book to send any particular message other than to explore the question of what we would be like and how we would act. So what I hope people will take away is basically this question of what we are really like, and how different are we from our own pets and domestic animals, and what would we be like if we were raised without any knowledge that we're going to die, or raised without any knowledge of sex? Those are sort of the main questions that I hope people stick in people's mind as they, after they read this book.
You know, you also think about, maybe go back and give thought to how we treat animals, how we treat other people, that old humanity issue that you're talking about there. The book is Kobo, available where books are sold, as well as the sequel, Kobo's Children. I mentioned in the beginning, you've argued 10 cases before the Supreme Court. We had a few minutes left here. Talk about that. I would think for a lawyer appearing before the Supreme Court, making the argument, that's got to be like the Super Bowl for lawyers. What's it like? What's the anticipation like as you're ready to make your presentation?
Well, it's very exhilarating and very intimidating, first 5 minutes. I argued most of these cases when I was in the office in the Department of Justice, the Solicitor General's office, that represents the United States in cases where the United States is a party in the Supreme Court. And so 8 of my cases were there. And I was a fairly young lawyer at the time. And the second time I'd ever opened my mouth in a courtroom was in the United States Supreme Court.
Wow, okay.
And I was nervous. There I was, as is customary, I think it's still customary for government attorneys to wear a morning coat, a vest with tails, and a bow tie, which we had 5 or 6 suits around the office that we would share. Anyway, I was obviously very nervous. But the Supreme Court, and I've argued cases in lots and lots of appellate courts, the Supreme Court is the most active of all of them. That is, they ask lots of questions. So in my last argument, for example, I was peppered with one question after another, more and more hostile questions my whole time. I never really got any opportunity to make my main points, except as I could do so in response to questions. But it is exhilarating. And after the first 5 minutes, you kind of engaged in this debate with these very smart justices. Yes. All of them are smart. I don't agree with them all, but all of them are smart. And so you get in kind of the spirit of debate and contest.
Is there a point where it becomes fun? That, yeah, I'm here and I'm holding my own with those people there.
It's fun when they agree with you.
Well, yeah.
When they're giving you a hard time, it's not so fun.
Well, how difficult is it to read the room? Somebody is making a case to the Supreme Court, and a half hour later, you've got all the news services saying, they pick up the tone. They seem to be against. They seem to be for. They seem to be split. Can you tell as you're making your presentation if it's working, what way they're leaning?
It's hard, particularly when you're arguing the case, because you're trying to think of what you need to say and how to respond to questions. I think it's easier for observers to read the justices than it is for the advocate himself. And I've observed a lot of Supreme Court cases and other cases, and I can sort of tell where they're headed. My guess is, if I had to bet on the outcome after watching oral arguments, I'd be right 80% of the time.
Not a bad average. Not a bad average at all.
Well, actually, even without hearing arguments, if you read the briefs, you can pretty much guess who's likely to win.
We're seeing a lot of action with the Supreme Court. Lot has been thrown at them going into this term, and the emergency rulings that are coming out. You taught the Constitution. You're a student of the Constitution. Where are we? Are you concerned? You talk to a number of lawyers that say the Constitution is really being put to a test now. How do you feel about that as a lawyer, as a student of the Constitution?
Well, I think the current circumstances, this administration is putting the Constitution to the test. Whether it will succeed in changing the Constitution remains to be seen. I mean, the Supreme Court has not issued many decisions, at least in this administration. So I tend to be an optimist, you know, like most lawyers, particularly people who argue litigators, you know, we tend to see that there are two sides to almost every question, two reasonable sides to almost every question.
Yes.
And, I think in the long run, the court gets it right. And I think in the long run, this court will get it right.
Do we need more of that where we all look at these issues and realize there are two sides and we're okay with that? Because now if you take a side, you hate the person on the other side, it seems. Should we be more reflective in that, okay, here's an opinion, there's an opinion, let the best opinion win?
I think we should be much more that way. Some judge made the comment that everybody hates lawyers because lawyers always see two sides of the of issues, and most people only see one side, their side. I definitely think we need to be more open about these issues. You know, Obama made a comment early in his administration, I think in an Esquire magazine interview, that most of the questions that came to him are not open and shut. They're mostly 60-40, and some 51-49.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a refreshing observation. Of course, Obama was a good lawyer. He was editor-in-chief of the Harvard Law Review. Anyway.
Well, it's fascinating what's going on now, and even more fascinating, you can escape it all when you get tired of the yelling and screaming back and forth and pick up a copy of Kobo and Kobo's Children, also available now. Both of the books. The books are available wherever books are sold. I'd like to thank King Pages Press for arranging our conversation with Richard today. The author's marketing consultant, results-oriented, making sure your work gets the attention it truly deserves. Richard, it's been a pleasure giving us a whole lot to think about, an entertaining story and trying to visualize the world these people are living in and what they're going through and role reversal with the animals. A fascinating read. Thank you for being with us on the program.
Thank you for having me, Rick. It's been a pleasure.
It has been a pleasure to be able to host you and to talk about the book, Kobo, a book available wherever books are sold. Also, Richard's website, richardallenauthor.com. You can link onto that by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. You are listening to This Week in America, and there's more on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.